Second hour, first edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yost, your host. Thank you for joining us or sticking with us for our second hour on this Monday. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9, and don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yost. That is my name, S-E-A-N. YOES, or go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I will share it with the people, unless you don't want me to, and I won't. Coming up a little bit later in this second hour on this new Hour of Power, Monday, Be Inspired Monday, we'll catch up with Khadijah Ali Coleman and continue our conversation about the quest for authentic living. That's coming up in a few moments. But first, we go to the legacy of Barack Obama. I believe it's 10 days left in his historic presidency. We have on the phone the author of the book Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished. He is Michael I. Days. Michael Days, welcome to First Edition.
Thanks so much for having me on, Sean. Much appreciated.
No, we appreciate you taking time to talk to us. I mentioned it may seem like sarcasm and a bit of hyperbole, but I think for a lot of people, literally millions of Americans, these last 10 days is like being on the 10 days of death row, given what, you know, I know that sounds over the top, but I mean, when you take into account, Michael, what we have seen transpire, forget about even the primary process and the election process, but what we've witnessed in the process of the transition of Donald Trump into becoming the 45th president of the United States, it is literally the antithesis of what we saw during the Obama presidency. When you talk about Obama's legacy, there are certain main bullet points that we can talk about and we will talk about. But one of the main overarching narratives of Obama's legacy was that it was literally drama-free. It was scandal-free. We're seeing what seems to be a recipe for the exact opposite coming up with the 45th president. Is that a fair statement in your mind?
Well, you know, we always said no drama Obama, and there was no drama. To your point, there was no scandal. You know, just as being a member of the press, it's going to require those of us in media to begin thinking about new ways to cover this this president. How he is functioning thus far is out, you know, it's certainly nowhere near what has been considered traditional.
Right.
But, you know, but in terms of what you're saying initially about people sort of being on a death watch, I'm out and about a bit, you know, talking about the book and signing books, and right after the election, I was up in New York, and people were, like, really crestfallen, and I sort of took them to a video that a lot of us have seen about the 5-year-old girl from Birmingham, Alabama. She finds out that the president can't run again, and she screams and howls and throws herself on the ground, and she says inconsolable. I say, you know, I think we all, those of us who feel that way, need to take that moment and do that. But then I think we need to dust ourselves off and get really, really focused on what do we want America to be.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, you talked about media and covering this. You're the editor of the Philadelphia Daily News. And I'm going to get to the substance of your book, but I'm really interested in hearing some of your insights, some of your thoughts on what the coverage has been like so far. What I've seen from much of the corporately driven media is an attempt to seemingly normalize what has transpired with Donald Trump in his transition into becoming the 45th president of the United States, when indeed there is very little normal about a man being up in the middle of the night tweeting out what he, I suspect, are policy thoughts, and even his attack upon Meryl Streep because of her speech during the Golden Globes. What do you think? What are your thoughts about how media so far, notwithstanding what you just said about we have to devise different ways to cover this president in particular, but what are your thoughts so far about what the coverage has been like specifically from corporately driven media?
Well, I mean, corporate, I think everybody's in a bit of a shock in terms of what actually occurred, you know, going back to election night. And I think we're also looking at what other folks are doing. I think what the Washington Post is doing in terms of looking at the tweets and what, you know, calling it what it is when it's not even when he misspoke, it's when he told a lie.
Right.
So I think people were trying to get much more comfortable in using plain language and not being fearful of using plain language. And that doesn't mean that it needs to be a witch hunt, because, you know, the facts or the lack of facts will present themselves. I mean, I think in terms of who his appointees are going to be and who's going to try to get through, I think we've got to be really clear in shedding a bright light on who has actually gone through the process in a way that makes some sense. The whole issue of affordable Obamacare, I think, you know, people just have got to be real clear about whether they believe this to be good for the country or not, to have affordable health care. I mean, most of us and the 22 million people who now have insurance believe that is essential. And I think, personally, I don't think Donald Trump's going to be able to unbundle all that, because there are things in Obamacare that most people just really very much appreciate. And, you know, all these many years later, and then, you know, the Republicans have been talking about getting rid of it for 8 years now. They really don't have a replacement.
Right, right. So let's talk about the president's legacy. The 44th president of the United States. Someone was posting on social media. They wanted people to name specifically one specific thing that Barack Obama had done specifically and only for black people, which is in itself a strange question to ask, given that he is the president of the United States, I think. I think much of what the president did accomplish was applicable to all people across the spectrum of race, culture, ethnicity, whatever. I understand other people's, you know, consternation about other issues, but what I want to talk about, Michael, is you mentioned the Affordable Care Act and the Republicans' inability possibly to unbundle all of that, but these other accomplishments. The longest continuous period of job growth in U.S. history, 2/3 reduction of the federal budget deficit, the stock market, we were on the brink of financial collapse. The Obama administration, now 8 years after the beginning, seems willing to admit that they weren't very good in promoting themselves. Was that a catastrophic mistake in a lot of ways, given all the attacks that they were under? If they were able to be more, have a greater ability to demonstrate, show, to publicize what they didn't accomplish, maybe you'd be looking at even a different, a higher trajectory, if you will, as far as his accomplishments as president of the United States.
Well, let's think about this a minute. The day he was inaugurated, in January 2009, the ranking Republican leaders in Congress gathered to try to figure out how to make his life a living hell, make sure that he did not have a second term. What's that about, really? Here's the president of the United States, President Obama. When he took that oath, he was handed the worst economy in like 50, 60 years.
Right.
You know, they called it the Great Recession, which is a nice way to say that we were about in a depression.
Right.
Millions of jobs had been lost. As you said, the stock market had tumbled. There were so many people on unemployment, and the stock market was under 8,000. You know, it's been trying to close at 20,000 lately, which is phenomenal. And the record job growth, year month after month after month, year after year after year. Should he have patted himself on the back and said, I did this, would not have hurt. But there's a part of me that believes, and I deal with some of this in the book, there are just people, one of the reasons I did the book, people just did not want to give him his due. And some of us, and that includes me, believe it was racially charged.
Well, and I want to speak to that point in a moment, but I mean, maybe the president himself should not have been charged to actually pat his own self on the back, mm-hmm. but his surrogates yeah. and the people in the Democratic infrastructure, the Democratic Party, should have, I believe, taken a more active role in pointing out the mm-hmm. Very important accomplishments of this president, and it didn't seem to happen. But back to the racial component, I want to share with you a conversation that I had today. I was at my gym, which my listeners know is I'm one of the only black cats at the gym, and it is in a Republican stronghold, quite frankly. And there's a lady in the gym, white lady. She's about 60 years old. She owns a hair salon. And she is like one of the only progressives in that gym. And she'll just look at me and I'll look at her and we'll just kind of shake our heads. And we had a conversation today and she said specifically, I didn't prompt this at all. She said specifically, we were talking about the transition and Trump in general. And she said, you know, she deals with white. She used the term white trash. That was the term she used. I didn't say that. She said as far as the young girls who work in her salon and her parents, and she said specifically to me, and I must again say, unprompted, she said the vast majority of the attacks against Barack Obama during these 8 years were racially motivated. Now, she's saying this, again, coming from a Republican stronghold on the eastern shore of Maryland, and being surrounded by these people all the time. She said it unprompted. But at the same time, Michael, we've seen the media seeming to say, to bend over backwards, to find reasons why people who voted for Trump outside of the specter of racism. Speak to that. What are your thoughts about how this has played out, as you just alluded to, that much of the antagonism, much of the backlash against him has been racially motivated. But how do you think the media has played? How do you think that they have presented it over these 8 years?
Well, I think certainly a number of columnists, particularly columnists of color, have been really strong on the issue of what it is. I mean, you know, the whole you got to give the incoming president his due, so to speak, for tapping into all that racial animus, you know, make America great again. What does that really mean?
Oh, you know what it means.
Yeah. I think black folks think it means make America white again.
Yeah. And take it back to another time.
I think that's what he was able to tap into. And you know, some people believe that, you know, Hillary needed to have been a much better campaigner. She really needed to have shared her vision of what she saw in America as opposed to just responding to whatever he had to say. So I do think that, you know, so many people in this country don't really understand what has happened economically, that, you know, the age of the industrial age is over. We're in the technological age now. Right. And, you know, in spite of what, you know, the incoming president says, you know, these factories are not coming back here. You know, we've just moved on. When's the last time any of us really had to go into a bank to do basic banking or not check ourselves out of a supermarket? I mean, those jobs are not coming back.
Right.
Should those jobs be going away? You know, from a ethical point of view, probably not. But this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about making money in a corporate America.
Right, right. So much to unpack. So your book talks about the president's accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
From your perspective, Michael, what did the president not accomplish that maybe he had the opportunity to accomplish? What big items? What was the thing that stuck out to you that the president didn't necessarily accomplish that could have, you know, what could have taken place that did not take place? Where was the major missed opportunity as far as Barack Obama was concerned?
I suspect if he had to do it all over again, if he knew that the House and Senate were going to transform into Republican houses, he probably would have pushed more on the whole issue of immigration. Mm. You know, he got frustrated toward the end of his second term and produced a lot of executive orders. I can think one or two of them has really been overturned by the Supreme Court. You know, we've been trying to figure out the immigration piece for a very, very long time.
Right.
And I think he spent most of his, you know, used most of his marbles in that first few years on the Affordable Care Act, which, you know, clearly that was a lot of work. He wasn't getting a whole lot of help with it, and it was a lot of negotiating. But I do think that's an area where he could have had much more success. But, you know, go ahead.
In hindsight, was it, in your mind, was it a mistake? And, of course, hindsight is 2020, but was it a mistake to expend so much political capital on the Affordable Care Act?
Well, you know, president's been trying to get something done
70 years
for many years. 70 years, right? So, you know, I've been talking to folks. Oh my God, this legacy's going to overturn the Affordable Care Act, and you know, it may evolve, and it probably should evolve. But it's all, you know, he's always going to get the credit for finally, you know, pushing it through some kind of universal health care or a version of universal health care for American citizens.
Right.
I want to go back to you talking about, you know, what did he do for black folks?
Okay.
I'm of the opinion that, you know, we're all Americans. In fact, you know, the Africans on this planet are some of the first Americans, given our history here. So when he's, you know, when he's trying to figure out, fix the economy, who benefits from that? We all benefit. Certainly black folks, we're always underrepresented, you know, underhired and all that. You know, when he's trying to make health care available for folks, who benefits from that? We all do. You know, you have to really search really hard to find stuff that's specific to black folks, although he did target money specifically to historically black colleges and universities. And he, you know, he's been real active in programs that are designed to help young African American Latino men move into the mainstream, so to speak, be ready with education, all of that. But you know, I take the long view on that thing. If he's working on behalf of America, I assume he's working on behalf of me.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about Obama's legacy in the historical context. I had predicted a couple of years back that he would finish with an approval rating close to 60%. Thank God I was right about that. I was wrong about the outcome of the election, unfortunately. But I was right about the fact that he would finish near an approval rating of 60%. It's right around 57% kind of across the board, which is outstanding in historical context. What are your thoughts, Michael, about how history how Obama will be ranked in the pantheon of the presidents, say 20 years from now, because right now we're in the fog of the transition of Trump and what is going to happen or not going to happen over the next 4 years. But in the next 20 years, if you were to kind of look into do some prophesying, if you will, where do you think that this president, the 44th president, would be at in that pantheon of presidents?
Well, you know, I argue in the book that he's a transformative president, and I will go to my grave believing that, and I think history will prove that to be the case. On domestic issues, he's been very, very strong as best he could, given what he had to deal with in Congress. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of support there. When you look at the issues related to women and equity for women, appointments to the courts, including the Supreme Court of women. When you look at LGBT issues, you know, we went, you know, and you know, 8 years is a really short period of time in the history of mankind. We went from don't ask, don't tell to people in the closet.
Absolutely.
To marriage equity for all. Now, he was sort of pulling up the rear on that, but he figured out how to get in front of it, you know. And then, you know, the Justice Department, you know, a lot of people have issues with women serving in combat, but, you know, it is what it is. Women have the right to serve in combat. So all those kinds of issues, I think he did a commendable job on. On the international front, well, you got the Nobel Peace Prize, and I think he improved our stature across the planet. Now, some things are just going to have to play out. You know, the war, you know, he didn't start those wars, but he tried to finish it, and we all know it's not that easy just to pack up your people and bring them on home. So some of that, the tensions in the Middle East, tensions in Israel, and all that, I mean, it's going to take a bit to, to play all that out.
Is that going to be is what happened in Syria? Is that going to be for lack of a better analogy, what Rwanda was to Bill Clinton?
Yeah, well, that's a good comparison. Could be. This has not always been a country where people don't try to help others in need. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens under President Trump with that. That's what I'm not so sure about. But I do think that some of the foreign issues are much more tricky and much more convoluted, much more complicated. But here's a guy, I think you started the show with this. Here's a no-drama guy. He's a guy that people were proud of. And I think one of the reasons that his approval rating is at 60 or near 60 is people have something to compare him to. Mm. And his family and his brilliant wife. I mean, it's been, I think Americans, at least a good chunk of Americans, were proud to have had him and really are, apoplectic that he's no longer going to be the president,
True. I think the true Obama legacy will be played out over generations when we see the result of there are little black boys in America who don't know anything but a black president.
Mm-hmm.
So once we get the measure of how those young men and young ladies, young women, how they evolve and they grow and they take on positions of leadership in our communities, then we'll see the true legacy of what Barack Obama was all about, breaking that seemingly unbreakable barrier and putting a black man in the highest, the most powerful position on the face of the earth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think about my own grandchildren. One, just the oldest, just turned 12, and the one will be turning 11 in April. As president, that's all they know.
Exactly.
All they know is a black man as president. I think you're right. I think it's those of us of a certain age told our kids, you can grow up to be anything, even president. But we didn't really mean it.
Exactly.
Now we didn't know. But now that we know it is possible. We know what is possible.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
Michael I. Days is author of Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished. He's also editor of Philadelphia Daily News. Michael, thank you for taking time to share with us the substance of your book. We appreciate you. All the best to you going forward.
All the best to you as well. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
Take care, bud. Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we will be back with Khadijah Ali Coleman. We're going to continue our conversation on this Be Inspired Monday about the quest for authentic living. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. Edition winding down a Monday evening, a Be Inspired Monday, a new hour of Power Monday, and in the studio with me is Khadijah Ali Coleman. She is the creative midwife. She is the founder of Liberated Muse. Good to see you.
Good to see you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, sis. Happy New Year. How you feel? You feel all right?
I'm feeling good. Right. What about you? You got your resolutions?
No, I don't do resolutions.
You don't do resolutions?
I do vision.
You do vision. Did you do your vision board for the year?
I didn't do a board, but I have a vision.
Okay.
I have a vision.
Just one or a couple of them?
It's a big overarching vision.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I'm pumped up.
Thank you for having me back.
No, thank you for taking time to talk to us, because this is an important conversation. We're continuing the conversation that we started a couple weeks back. And that is the quest for authentic living. I mean, why don't we, again, kind of define what that is? Because it may sound in some people's minds like kind of a lofty term, but it really isn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, finding your authentic self is a real thing, and it takes real work in order to get there. So why don't you, I'll let you define it the way you want to define it.
Well, just really recapping from what we discussed last month, I spoke about these loops that we get caught on a lot of times where we are reenacting this vision that others may have of us, or what we think is expected of us because of the environment we're in or our upbringing. And really, when we are talking about finding our authentic self or becoming our authentic self, it's really breaking free from these loops, not being trapped by these expectations and these outer things that kind of define what it is that we're doing, what we're feeling, and how we're operating as a whole.
Indeed. I want to read something. Something just popped into my spirit when you said that, how people try to define us or try to perpetuate their own vision that they have for us onto us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about, we did a show on gratitude right before the end of the year,
mm-hmm.
right? And I was talking to my friend, Erica Bridgeford, who works, she's director of training for mediation, Community Mediation Maryland.
Mm.
And anybody who knows Erica knows that, first of all, she's one of the brightest people that you want to meet. But also, she is her authentic self. And I'll leave it at that. I'm trying to find out. Of course, my computer is locking up. But I was trying to find a quote because I wrote about that conversation that we had about gratitude. And it included something that she said about not being weighed down with other people's expectations mm-hmm. of who she is, being a black girl growing up in West Baltimore without her right hand.
Mm-hmm.
People wanted to say, you are blank,
exactly.
blank, 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 blank.
Mm-hmm.
And she has spent her time as a young adult saying, nah, I'm
right.
I'm this.
Right.
And
well, you know, folks kind of as a whole, as humans, we get comfortable with things that we can easily put in boxes.
Absolutely
if we
true.
If someone, for instance, if we find out that someone is affiliated with a religion that we trust, then we automatically have attached something positive to that person without even knowing anything about their character or their personality. If we know that someone has gone to a certain school, then we make assumptions about their mentality or their intellectual ability. It happens all the time. And so, I mean, that's what we do. That's part of human nature. And so, you know, the flip side of that, being on the other end of that, is always getting outside of these boxes and
Absolutely.
Being able to really hold on to what makes us unique and individuals.
Mm-hmm. I want to just read this one line because it's so applicable to what we're talking about.
Okay.
What she says, Erica said, I spent a lot of my life, and I wrote this in my column in the Afro, I spent a lot of my life believing other people's perceptions of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there,
mm-hmm.
Once you can break that box,
yes,
that's a major breakthrough right there.
You know, and I agree. And what I like to say a lot of times, because it really, it's been a work in progress for me, you know. And at no time when I speak on this topic do I even try to give the impression that I got it all together. It's a work in progress.
That would be a foolish kind of thing to
that'd
say.
Be so arrogant, wouldn't
yeah.
it?
Well,
that'd be crazy.
And foolish, because
right.
Ultimately, I mean, life humbles us every single day,
exactly.
seemingly, you know.
Well, what I like to say is, you know, that's not my truth. Someone says something, that's not my truth. That's, you know, that may be, you know, your belief or perception of me, but that's not my truth. And I really, you know, and I'm in my 40s now, I'm really having to go back and really assess where are some of the spaces where something that I'm holding on to right now, was based on something that someone said about me, or something that because I got this award or because I didn't get this award, I started to have this belief about myself that is so counter from what's really true. And that's, you know, that we call that reflection, musing or meditating or whatever. But a lot of us, I do it so often now that it's becoming a behavior, and it makes me more empathetic to not only other people, but to myself. And I believe that you can't really truly be empathetic to others unless you are empathetic to yourself first and foremost.
You got to cut yourself a break, right?
Yeah,
because we can be our own worst enemies, and we can beat the hell out of ourselves better than anybody else can beat us up.
That's
quite
true.
Frankly, I would offer this to you, sis. At 40, whatever you are, you're still a baby. Once you get once you hit 50, then that wisdom and stuff is really gonna kick in.
That's what I hear. But you know, one of my favorite songs is about Earth, Wind, and Fire. And when they say, I always thought it was cells never dissipate; they only recreate to another. But I think I was looking up a lyric sheet, and the sounds never. But I like my version better. Cells never dissipate, and I love that song. I write a song for you, Earth, Wind, and Fire. But I really apply that to just this whole growing that we do. You know, it's never where we're stuck, or that's the greatest thing about life is this evolution. And you know, when we're little kids, we think, oh, when I'm old, and when you're little, old is like 25. But to be in my 40s now and to realize that there's still so much that I can do to evolve as a person is truly one of the beautiful things. But there was one thing. The reason why I started off asking you about resolutions was because, of course, it's the beginning of the new year. But I have absolutely no advice in terms of what people should make resolutions about, or even visions, as you called it. But there were three things that I just want to caution people, you know, as we're at the start of the year.
Sure.
When we, a lot of times I hear people, okay, it's a new year, I'm going to start to, and their new choices are based on these three things: comparing themselves,
to others.
Uh-huh. Trying to get rid of what they call the boring life, and going against everything that is intuitive to what they believe is the whole grass is greener on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so my advice to people for this year is just to, you know, stop the comparison, feel the feel, which is really paying attention to your body. How does your body react, you know, positively when you're in an environment, when you're interacting with other people, and really paying attention to our body. I'm one of those people that have psychosomatic illness. And so, you know, I've gotten pneumonia twice in my life, and they were both times during severely stressful periods. And a lot of times, especially when it's cold weather and people are getting sick, they attribute it to the weather, or, you know, not bundling up, not eating right. But a lot of times, you know, if we look at what triggers are in our environment, so those two, and then examining what boring is. I hate when people tell me that they're so bored or their life is so boring. We're in a phase right now where, you know, social media, people are really creating these images that people see that give others the impression. And it goes back to comparison.
Okay.
But go, you know, how they think that their life is so boring because this person just posted a picture of them in the Virgin Islands. And I use that because that's my favorite place in the world. But, you know, really re-examining what this boring is. And I think those three things will really help you make resolutions that not only are amenable to who you are, but are realistic, you know?
Sure. I'm going to come back to that boring piece in a moment, but I think we have time to unpack the resolution thing a little bit. And the reason why I think I'd stray away and have for many years from resolutions is because typically a resolution is, and we were talking about this last week, actually. A resolution is, okay, it's almost like another way to beat up on yourself. Mm-hmm. If you feel you're overweight, then, okay, I'm going to lose 50 pounds. That's my resolution.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like you do something, I don't know, it's about, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And when we put that type of pressure on each other, I mean, we see what happens at the beginning of the year. Gym memberships, people are in the gym, they're on the treadmills, they're doing their thing, and And after a while, if you don't have a plan to attack that mm-hmm. thing that you say you're going to do, then a month later, you're going to be off of that regimen. Mm-hmm. So that's why I talk about not making resolutions, because they can be empty without a strategy to back them mm-hmm. up, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I talk about vision, because vision forces you to right. put a little bit more, much more thought into thought and feeling, mm-hmm. heart, spirit, mm-hmm. mind, all of it, into what you want to accomplish,
exactly.
right? But
and it also does what you say. It also forces you to reflect on, especially looking at weight in general. You know, it's not just about, oh, I'm fat. Something happened. You're either too busy, you're not taking care of yourself, mm-hmm. or you're not eating food that fuels you. There's so many reasons as to why you've gained weight rather than just you're fat or you're bigger. And so what you're saying is completely true, because it forces you not only to vision for the future, but also reflect on the past so that we're not making the same mm-hmm. choices that have led us to this place now that we want to, you know, redefine.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to what you just said about the boring life, right? And you make a really, really important point, because people are able, through the manifestation of social media and the burgeoning of social media, quite frankly, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, whatever it is, people are able to project mm-hmm. the lives that they want to project. Mm-hmm. And it's all about, oh, look what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, look at what I'm fly.
Yeah,
I'm
you crafted an image. Yeah.
Right. And if people were to just take this one piece of advice, and that piece of advice is that you never know what people are going through. Mm-hmm. They can project whatever image they want to project, and it's their right. I'm not, mm-hmm. and I'm not disparaging their ability or desire to do so, mm-hmm. because if it makes you feel good, you know, get down or whatever. Mm-hmm. But don't get caught up mm-hmm. from the outside mm-hmm. and think, oh my God, look what she's doing. Look
right.
where she at. Look at
right.
her clothes. Look
you
at her neck.
Stop comparing.
Right. Because you don't know.
You have no clue.
You don't know what mm-hmm. they're going through. You don't know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 90% of the time, that image that you see, you know, it's only a very small percentage of what's really happening in somebody's
and
life.
And the thing is that makes sense. We're dimensional people.
Mm-hmm.
We are people with, you know, we're mothers, we're daughters, we're sons, we're, you know, we play different roles. We wear different hats. So, I mean, it's ridiculous to believe that these images that you're getting a snapshot of really define the total being that you, you know. And for, it really amazes me how people have arguments and make life choices based on what they see someone else doing on Facebook, because it really diminishes your connection to yourself. When you're looking at other people and comparing right. what other people are doing, you really are, what you're doing is devaluing, you know, what you bring to the table and who you are.
Right. So let's talk about, as I ID the fact that we are winding down a Monday evening here on First Edition, in the midst of our Be Inspired segment, our new Hour of Power segment with Khadijah Ali Coleman. Let's go beyond the fake out that people go through as far as when they see everybody's fabulous on social media. When we go beyond the fake out, but what if somebody, in your opinion, Khadijah, if somebody decides, say it's at the end of 2016, they do some reflecting, they really take some time, right? And they say, you know what? The place where I'm at in my life, beyond the scope of where everybody else is, mm-hmm. but the place where I am, I want to change that. I want to embark upon a different journey mm-hmm. in 2017. Talk about how people, or at least from your perspective, how people can begin to embark upon that journey in a healthy way.
Well, I appreciate that question, because I do that all the time, and that's what I use social media for. It's really to put a call out to my tribe, mm-hmm. whether the current tribe or mm-hmm. if I need to, you know, mm-hmm. craft a tribe or find a tribe for what these new things or this new direction I'd like to take.
New adventure.
And that's what I found social media to be very helpful, is I put the call out. I know that one of my personal directives or visionings for the new year was that I really wanted to travel more. I had complained about it in my personal life, just been really vocal. This past year I didn't really do any type of recreational travel. Like, I really enjoy traveling, and for many reasons. I started new employment. There were many reasons, but I was like, that's going to change because the power really lies with me. I put a call out. Folks made recommendations to Facebook groups to join. I had all types of suggestions coming my way. But I also became more involved in not just complaining about it, but making, the choice to, start making plans for my travel. Even if it meant that I had to travel alone.
Uh-huh.
And so what I would recommend for anyone is that, complaining is easy. Looking at our deficits is really easy, but a lot of times we can draw from our assets, which is really the community around us.
Now that's a great way to use social media.
Yeah.
As opposed to tripping on, man, look at that car and all that stuff. To use it to help. I mean, use it as something that can, and it can be. It's so interesting. There's so many foul connotations to social media, but it can be a really incredible resource for people if you apply it the right way.
Oh yeah.
And that traveling piece, that's a really interesting piece because you said something really that's key. People, if you really want to travel, maybe you should look at the option of traveling alone.
Right.
Because this joke right here that you're looking at, I never travel alone.
Right, me neither.
You know?
I know.
And you know what?
Yep.
I'm going to travel alone this
right.
year.
And you know, that was the big excuse that I had for last year. It was
right.
like no one to come, or it was always something outside of myself.
Right.
And that was the thing, is I'm going to be traveling solo. And now I'm part of like 3 travel communities just in a matter of weeks.
That's
just
dope.
From putting that out there.
That's dope.
Yeah.
That's dope. That's a good one. That is, I mean, that's pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
There is a process there, and it's not pie in the sky. I mean,
right.
it's just something that if you want to change your life, it just takes it takes a little bit of thought, and persistence.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you got to step outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's always, that can be, in our minds at least, a harrowing experience because change is hard for some people.
It's very overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It can be.
And especially depending on your personality type. It can be very overwhelming. Some of us are very stuck in our routines and our loops. But that's one of the biggest challenges is really understanding that we have the power to skip out of this loop, and it doesn't have to be anything major. It can be small and, small attainable goals.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do you recommend, Khadijah? This segment in particular is one that relies on spirit and speaks on spirit all the time. And so many times I think people begin to seek change. But they find themselves kind of ramming their head against the wall because they want to do things the old way. They want to do things. They want to do things the way that was comfortable to them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think oftentimes people don't realize that in order to have the type of changes that they seek, you have to kind of break old habits, right? I would argue that breaking old habits sometimes takes. Going outside of yourself, going higher than yourself, and that means a spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts about how people who aren't necessarily rooted spiritually can find that path?
Well, when we even talk about spirituality, it's so relative to who that person is. And a lot of times, one person may think is not being rooted in spirituality can just be a different way or different name that we call it.
Of course.
But I know that.
And when I say spirituality, I certainly don't mean necessarily religion.
But
not necessarily.
But when I think of this not necessarily disconnect from spirituality, but more so of because that spirit is what's guiding us,
of course,
to me. And when you are not listening solely to that,
right.
Then what are you listening to? You're listening to everything that's external. You're listening to
noise.
Right. You're listening to, it could be other people, your parents saying, you shouldn't leave that job. What are you going to do? Well, you know what? Or it's that person or your inner voice saying, you can't travel. You're going to get kidnapped. You're going to knock you upside the head. And
but
so,
right?
but so what the first step is really just, knowing that those voices are going to exist and go and doing it anyway. That's the only thing that you can really do to take this is yes. Because, see, people want to hear that it's not going to be painful, that you're not going to have people that are upset, that people are going to still like you, you know. And you have to realize that once you make a decision to change out and to step outside of this loop, there are going to be some very upset people. There are going to be some people who don't like you, who not only don't like you, but try to come for you, okay? They're going to, you yourself, you're going to have maybe some a period of discomfort, whether it's monetary or just an inconvenience, you know, that happens. So being prepared for that, but not allowing that to stop you.
Well, that's, you preaching now, because, I mean, and I don't want to attach this strictly to younger people, because it's not just necessarily younger people, but we kind of seem, it seems like we're in an era, an age, if you will, of nobody wants to feel anything.
Right.
Like, you know, it's
or
like.
Or bad stuff. No
right,
one wants to feel the
right,
bad
right.
stuff.
Nobody
right.
wants to feel the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to, nobody wants to take responsibility for their actions or feel like there are consequences to stuff. Mm-hmm. And and you see it all the time manifest, whether it be on social media, whether it be on reality shows. It's just like, hey, everybody's just,
right.
it's just, let's just be fabulous.
And so we don't want to feel it. And then when we parent, that happens. And so what that impacts is our resiliency. So if we're not able to fall and have issues and have discomfort, then our resiliency is not being tested. So we don't have that ability to bounce back, because we've never had to bounce. We've never had a hard knock or anything. And so it's all connected. Resiliency, lack of it, is really impacted by our willingness to be uncomfortable, but knowing that we hold the power to really make a change. And it sounds so so schmaltzy when I say that, but it, in reality, it's the most it's the simplest form of who we are, is when we are able to go forward and not allow other people's, you know, if you look at little kids, they don't have one hot damn about what is it, you know, they will say, no, I don't want to do that. They won't share with you. Because they are centered on what feels good for them right now. They're not programmed to be concerned about what other people, and it's an extreme version. It's an extreme version,
but
that's the natural state that we're in. And so finding that balance where we still have care and concern for other people, but we're not stifled from being who we are.
But we're tuned into that voice and that spirit that guides us to find in that place where we are, that are unique as we continue the evolution, because we won't stop seeking it out until we pass out of this life. It's an ongoing process. I mean, once you stop growing, once you stop evolving, then it's pretty much over.
Yeah.
I hear people say they plan on retiring, right? And I get what that means, but in my mind, I'm like,
me neither. I'm like, what does that mean?
I was like, retire from what?
Right.
What do you mean? You're just going to sit down? And I mean, some people, that's what they aspire to do. They aspire to sit down and not do no more work.
Right.
But even if you're not working, quote unquote, a job, you still have a mission. You can't retire from life.
Right.
You know?
So this position you might retire from, but you're still, I totally am there. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
Like, I have like 10 more things that I want to do.
Right. I mean.
And I plan on being a cool grandma.
The whole notion of retirement, I mean, without adventures, might as well go on, call it a day, and transition on. I mean, pray you lived a good life and God will receive you well, and that would be it. But. Very important lessons, very important conversation to have as we begin this new year, and we embark upon the unknown 10 days away in Washington, D.C.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a whole nother conversation, right? You know, Khadija Ali Coleman is the creative midwife, the founder of Liberated Muse. Khadija, thank you for coming through and sharing your wisdom with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, yeah. That's it for us. That is it for First Edition. It is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by executive producer Sean Yoes, associate producer Yorio Digizua. Our board operators are Andre Melton and Ty Rice. Our First Edition interns are Kristen West, Janelle Ferguson, and Alex Blanc. Stay tuned for Keep It Moving with Marsha Jews next. Right here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I am Sean Yoes. Peace.
But I don't have the time to cry, and it's all right.
It's all right.
It's all right. All right. Mm. Any thoughts are running through my head, it's all right. Wishing to be somewhere else but here, and it's all right. I can't wait to see your face. I need a smile in your face.